Today, I want to start by telling you a story about a man named Friedrich Mohs. Actually, I don't know how to say his last name because though I'm German in background, I never learned German. So if you're German in background and I'm saying Mohs wrong, just please bear with me. He was a German scientist and he lived during the late 1700s and 1800s, or late 1700s, early 1800s, and studied chemistry, math, and physics. But he also studied at the Mining Academy in Freiburg, Saxony, and he became foreman at a mine and gained a lot of experience with minerals. And then in 1802, he moved to Austria, where a banker had a special task for him. But he didn't want Friedrich to work at the bank. He didn't want Friedrich to run his mine. He employed Friedrich to try to identify various minerals in his rock collection. So how would you like that for a job? A banker agrees to pay your moving expenses and provide you with a salary just so you can spend time looking at his rocks. And apparently he had a big rock collection, or Friedrich was a slow worker because this took 10 years. So Friedrich's resume from 1802 to 1812 would say something like, "Identified rocks of Banker Joe." But apparently, Friedrich learned something, for in 1812, he moved to Graz, Austria, to a new job at the Museum and Science Academy. And as part of his responsibilities, he started classifying minerals by their physical characteristics. And this approach went against the more common study of the chemical composition of minerals. But the museum let him do his studies, which were pretty basic in that it simply involved scratching one mineral against another. And he came up with a scale that measured the ability of one mineral to leave a visible scratch on another mineral. So at social gatherings, when people asked Friedrich what he did for a living, he could say, "I scratch rocks." And what did he discover? Well, if mineral A left a visible scratch on mineral B, mineral A was harder than mineral B. And some minerals would not leave scratches on other minerals, so he knew those minerals were softer than the minerals he tried to scratch. And he came up with this scale called Mohs scale of mineral hardness. And what do you think was the hardest mineral of that time? Diamonds. So diamonds were given the number 10. And here you see a diamond that is octagonal or diamond-like still in the rock. That was considered the hardest mineral, so it was the highest on the scale, 10. And diamonds could scratch quartzes. So quartzes were given a 7. And quartzes could scratch something called fluorite. So fluorite became a 4. And fluorite could scratch talc. And talc couldn't scratch anything, so it became a 1. So Mohs scale of hardness goes from 10, the hardest diamond, to 1, the talc stone. And some of you know this to be. If you have a baby, you wouldn't sprinkle diamond powder on the baby, but you might sprinkle talc powder on the baby because you know it's soft. Now today, Mohs scale is not really used in the lab because chemical composition is a much more precise study, but it can still be helpful in the field when they're trying to identify a mineral discovered in a mine or ground. Now we know that Mohs scale of hardness applies to minerals, but what if we could apply it to our hearts? Specifically, what number of hardness using Mohs scale of 1 to 10 would be found on our hearts if Jesus came along and scratched our hearts gently with his word? When it comes to God and his truth, is the hardness in our hearts closer to that of diamonds or to talc? And you might think, well, why does that really matter? I choose to live my own way. But if you call yourself in, A hard heart towards God should be of great concern to you. A hard heart and love for God are opposite ends of the scale. Throughout the Bible, hard hearts lead to troubled relationships with God. God grieves over the hardness of people's hearts. God's anger flares up at hard-hearted people. God judges those with diamond-like hearts towards his truth. Proverbs 28:14 states, "Blessed is the one who fears the Lord always. Whoever hardens his heart will fall into calamity." Or in a call to worship in Psalm 95, the psalmist writes, "Today, if you hear God's voice, do not harden your hearts." Hard-heartedness is of great concern to God. And we will see this today in our continuing study of the Gospel of Matthew, where last week we began by studying Jesus' first parable, the parable of the sower. And today we get to look at the question, why does Jesus teach in parables? And the answer to that question raises the issue of hard hearts. And my prayer is God will use our time together to reveal the state of our hearts towards him and then empower us to respond to what he reveals. So if you have a Bible, please find Matthew 13, and we'll be looking at verses 10 to 17, or you can find it on your devices or find it in the Bible in front of you in the pew, and it's on page 688, Matthew 13, starting in verse 10. And if you're looking in the Bibles in front of you, the 10 is on the right-hand column near the bottom, and it's a little bit bolded. So Matthew 13, 10 to 17, and I'll be reading from the English Standard Version. "Then the disciples came and said to him, 'Why do you speak to them in parables?' And he answered them, 'To you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For to the one who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance, but from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. This is why I speak to them in parables, because seeing, they do not see, and hearing, they do not hear, nor do they understand. Indeed, in their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled that says, you will indeed hear, but never understand, and you will indeed see, but never perceive. For this people's heart has grown dull, and with their ears they can barely hear, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and turn, and I would heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For truly I say to you, many prophets and righteous people longed to see what you see, and did not see it, and to hear what you hear, and did not hear it." Last week we went through the parable of the sower and Jesus' interpretation of it later in this chapter. And we learned that Jesus spoke the parables to the crowds, but he only explained the parables to his disciples. And the disciples ask a question in verse 10, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" It could be they asked the question because they themselves didn't understand the parable. It could be because they noticed the crowds weren't understanding the parables. It could be that they were still thinking that Jesus had to bring in his kingdom like every other king, and the way that you did that was make sure your message was clear to the people. And parables were not cutting it. So they ask, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" And he answers, but likely not with the answer that they expect or want. He didn't speak in parables because he sensed he was losing the crowd. He didn't change his teaching method just to try something new. There was a very specific purpose for parables, And in Jesus' answer, we are going to discover something very significant that happens when we hear parables. So why does Jesus speak in parables? And Jesus' first answer appears to create more confusion than clarity. He writes in verse 11, or speaks, "To you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given." There are secrets in the kingdom of heaven? Why wouldn't this information be available to everyone? Aren't secrets usually bad because there's something to hide? Secrets exclude those who don't have them. This seems to muddy the water more. So maybe we can get somewhere if we were to understand what do they mean, or what does Jesus mean by the secrets of the kingdom of heaven. And that would be helpful if we could agree on what he means. But five commentators, five different meanings. What the secrets of the kingdom of heaven could be. The secrets could be, one, how to interpret the parables. Two, the nature of the kingdom. Three, the mysteries of how the kingdom operates. Four, the mysteries of God's truth. Five, end time secrets that are only passed on with veiled speech to God's people. But I think we can at least conclude that these secrets have something to do with the reality and nature of the kingdom of heaven. In the parable of the sower, we saw Jesus reveal that just because a person initially shows interest in Christ, it does not mean that they're a Christian. And Jesus has been trying to get across again and again that the kingdom of heaven is unlike any earthly kingdom. Yes, it refers to the reign of God, but at this time in history, in the Bible, and in our time today, it was not going to be a visible kingdom with a visible king and his palace and his throne and his capital city. This kingdom will not conquer through a change in government, but a change in people's hearts. And only the disciples, or those who respond to Jesus' message, receive knowledge about the kingdom. Notice, Jesus calls the secrets of the kingdom a gift. Verse 11, "To you disciples, it has been given. To the crowds, it has not been given." So, if we're talking about the kingdom of heaven, the giver of the secrets must be the King of heaven, God himself. God gives the secrets to some and does not give the secrets to others. Well, that's not fair. But God is perfectly just. There is not a millimeter or a drop of injustice in God. So what could God possibly accomplish by giving the secrets to some and not giving the secrets to others? Well, he's emphasizing a difference between the disciples and the responsive and the crowds and those who don't respond. And somehow the parables would make clear this difference. And we're encouraged we're on the right track with Jesus' words in verse 12. "For to the one who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away." So there will be even more of a difference, and it will become more obvious through the giving of the secrets of the kingdom through the teaching of the parables. So the disciples and those who respond to Jesus' message, who have some understanding, some of the secrets of the kingdom, will be given more. And to those who don't respond, even what they think they have in understanding will be taken away. And this will emphasize the difference between the responsive and unresponsive even more. All this can be accomplished through parables? That's what Jesus seems to be saying here. So we could summarize the first reason why Jesus spoke in parables like this. The parables test the heart of the listener. They act as a spiritual examination, prompting a response that will indicate whether a person's heart is open or closed to Christ. The parables check the hardness of our hearts. They reveal where we currently rank on the scale of hardness towards God. And we can discover this by paying attention to how we respond to parables when they are read or when they are heard over these next weeks. And there are really only two responses. One is wholehearted like commitment, and the other is less than wholehearted commitment to Christ. We saw in the parable of the sower last week that three out of the four responses were less than saving faith responses. Only one response resulted in fruit bearing, and that was the one of wholehearted commitment or giving over. So when we hear the parables of Jesus, do we think they're just interesting? Maybe a riddle that's got to be figured out? Or are we cut to the heart about our need to respond wholly and completely to Him as Lord? When we hear the parables or read them in the next weeks, do we get offended or are we pushed towards obedience to Christ? And any response less than wholehearted devotion reveals some sort of hard-hearted condition, degree or to some scale. Look at Jesus' words in verse 13. This is why I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. And to any Jewish reader or listener of Jesus' words at those moments, this would have been a huge red flag. For it pointed back to a time in Israel's history when things were going to get really bad. Jesus quotes from Isaiah 6. Isaiah was a prophet who prophesied through the reigns of four kings, and one of the kings was Uzziah, who followed the Lord for much of his reign and brought a lot of good into the kingdom. But in his later years, he grew proud, and he concluded, "Not only can I be king, but I can be the high priest." And so he defiantly took a censer, a smoking piece of incense, into the temple as if he could stand before the holy God in place of the high priest. And God struck him with leprosy. And the priest had to take Uzziah out of the temple. And he lived in isolation for the last 10 years of his life while his son reigned in his place. And then he died. So in the year that King Uzziah died, Isaiah is given this vision of a holy God. And Isaiah realizes his uncleanness as he looks at the holy God. And God atones for his sin. And then God says, "Who will go for us and who will send my message to all the people?" And Isaiah responds, "Here am I, send me." And then God tells Isaiah what he wants to preach. "Isaiah, I want you to go out and preach to a people whose hearts have grown dull and hard towards me. I want you to go and preach to a people who hear but do not understand, who see but do not perceive, who are given the message, but have a hard heart towards me." And that's what Jesus quotes in verses 14 and 15 of Matthew 13. Indeed, in their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled that says, even though they are given the message, their hearts become harder. Now, how would you like a ministry assignment like that? Your job is to go to people who will reject your message. And so Isaiah asks what perhaps many of us would ask. How long do I have to do this for, Lord? A month? 2 months? 6 months at max? No, until the cities lie in ruins and there's no inhabitants left. Until the nation lies devastated. It was a fearful and foreboding prophecy about God's coming judgment upon a hard-hearted people. And it ultimately happened with a resounding defeat of Israel and the destruction of the nation. And now Jesus reveals the same kind of hard-heartedness is found with these crowds. And the parables will only further reveal the hardness of their hearts. So as we travel through the parables in the weeks to come, please pay attention to your heart and how you respond to what Jesus will be saying. The first reason why Jesus teaches in parables is to test our hearts. The second reason is the parables give instruction to those who are responsive. They teach Jesus' disciples about the nature of the kingdom of heaven and clarify its mysteries. They show us how the kingdom operates in a very different way than the expectations of religious leaders and crowds. Jesus did not come like Donald Trump proclaiming he would make Israel great again if we only would change the government. He called for hearts to soften and turn to God's kingdom growing in us. And this can be a great comfort to us when we look around at the world today and we're tempted to conclude, wow, things are just getting worse and worse. Things are spinning out of control. The church is losing ground. Christianity is losing ground. God's plans are being smashed. No. God is at work behind the scenes and in and through people's lives, and he predicted this kind of hardening towards his message, but it does not do anything to dislodge his plans or prevent him from accomplishing his purposes and his will in the world and in our lives. In fact, we have been given a great blessing, which Jesus refers to in verses 16 and 17 of this passage. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For truly I say to you, many prophets and righteous long to see what you see and to hear what you hear, and they weren't able to. Which means, friends, that you and I have been given so much revelation about the mysteries and secrets of the kingdom of heaven. Think about David and Isaiah and Jeremiah and Moses and Adam and Eve. None of them had the New Testament to explain what was all going on. We have the entire New Testament to be able to look back at history, to what God has done in bringing Jesus, and then point us forward to the end and show us how to live in the meantime. If only we would spend time in it and soak in it. I was reading this morning, and in the little devotional that I'm reading, the author stated, God is a perfect God, and his communication is perfect. But it's we who miss the message. If we quickly read a passage of the Bible and then think we're done for the day, and we don't stop, and we don't listen, and we don't meditate, and we don't pray on what we've read, then we're not going to get God's perfect communication for us. Yet we are so blessed to see what we see and hear what we hear in the revelation that God has given to us through his word and through history. So how might we respond today? Maybe today God has revealed to you that your heart's been quite hard towards him. for quite a long time. And you've resisted his call upon your life, and you've resisted softening your heart. And you think it's a sign of weakness to admit your need of God. Yet the events of this past week in Fort McMurray, or maybe in your life, reveal how vulnerable we are. And I've said this before, I will say it again. In the world, in life, it's a sign of maturity when children become more and more independent from their parents. But in spiritual life, it's a sign of maturity when God's children become more and more dependent upon Him. And so if your heart has been hard towards God, will you stop shutting Him out and open your heart to that crack of light that He may have shone into your heart today? Some of us here might be complacent, pretty bored with Christ. Maybe your heart once burned bright for Him, but lately you feel like you're just going through the motions. Well, maybe today you need to remember the grace that God has shown you. Sometimes we lose our passion or desire because we forget how much we've been forgiven and how much we've been given, not in material possessions, not in bank accounts, but in life from God. So maybe we need to remember the grace that God has shown us. Or maybe you're resentful here today. You're pretty irritated by certain people or resent their presence in your life. And I'm not saying that we sweep issues under the carpet or fail to deal with conflict, but maybe to help us deal with the resentment in our hearts, we need to remember the mercy that God has shown to us. Mercy is giving someone something they don't deserve or didn't earn. And none of us deserved God's mercy. But we feel justified in withholding it from others? Maybe we need to explore that with God. And to every Christian, those who are keeping on the way and aiming to live by the power of the Spirit each day, will you keep your heart soft to God and progressing toward His next steps for you? The Christian life is either progressing or regressing. There's no in between. I've said this before too. The Christian life is like a train going uphill with no brakes. And as long as the train is moving forward and it's continually getting fuel, it's fine. But if the train runs out of fuel, it has no way to stop itself from rolling backwards. And that's what the Christian life is like. As long as we're moving forward and continually getting that fuel from God, from His power, from His word, from prayer, we can keep going. But if we stop that and stop having soft hearts towards God, we will stop and begin sliding backwards. That's what happens when hearts harden towards Him. What's your heart like today with respect to God and His call on your life? Like a diamond or like talc? Will you come to the Lord and respond to what He's been saying to you now as we meet at His table?